The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Our tech team ensure your broadband runs at its optimum speed. It's all part of the service.
Ethna Shortall, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan.
It's nice to talk to you, reminding people you're, of course, a Sunday Times arts journalist and author in your own right. And how are you doing?
I'm grand. Yeah.
You okay?
I like, you know, that you automatically say great
yes.
to that question. Now you go, I'm grand, you know?
Yeah.
It could be worse. It could be better, to be honest, but it could be worse.
Yeah, I think we're all heading towards that sort of exhaustion from it all, while at the same time not wanting to belittle other people's more profound problems,
exactly.
While at the same time accepting that you're allowed to have some of your own.
Yeah, well, I keep thinking, so I sum it up by saying I made New Year's resolutions, which I always do. And like, they're more like, you know, a change in attitude or an approach I hope to take this year. And I think it was the 4th of January when I realized this was not a new year at all. And yeah. So I would be holding those until April. So that's my approach.
Okay.
This is like an extension of 2020 and I'm beginning 2021 in April. And I'm going to return to those New Year's resolutions.
Okay. So so the last day of March, you'll be having New Year's Eve and getting stuck into.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nothing wrong with that. I was intrigued to learn that you've made a documentary on the Mills and Boone phenomenon. And we'll talk about them in a second, but please introduce to those of us, including myself, who've never read a Mills and Boone book, what is it as a genre, as a phenomenon?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I hadn't read one until very recently either. I was really interested in how successful they are, given this. You know, I'd heard of them, but I wasn't really familiar with them, and I hadn't read them. And I read a lot, and I think that I read across all genres. But they have been going from, I mean, the Mills and Boone as a publishing house has existed since 1908, but it's from the 30s that they really started doing what they're known for now, which is escapist romance. And it's love stories, usually of very high drama. They have changed a lot over the years, but the stereotypical Mills and Boone story maybe from the 60s, 70s, 80s, like, would have been very traditional. You might have like a ward and a guardian, and a romance might begin between them, or, you know, the stable boy and the wealthy woman who run the princess in the house, or, you know, billionaire oligarchs and their poorer virgin women.
Yes.
So, but they have changed. Like, that would be the stereotypical idea of a Mills and Boone romance. But now you do get, like, you know, so there's a medical line, like a whole subgenre of love stories set around hospitals, usually between staff, but maybe sometimes patients. And they were once called doctor and nurses, which is like how maybe sexist and traditional they once were, because it, you know, was male doctors and female nurses, and it was a romance between them. But now, so I hadn't, until I was making this documentary, I hadn't read them, and I read a few beforehand. And so now you will get, you know, women in high-powered medical jobs. They could be surgeons, you know, and they're having a relationship with, you know, a paramedic or something.
Yes.
So, but like, there is every, like, whatever your taste in romance, it is catered for by Mills and Boone. Like, there are paranormal genre. There's motorcycle romance, which is basically people wearing a lot of leather.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you answered that question pretty quickly. Yeah, okay.
I know, I haven't read those, but
yes.
I just came across them. I decided that was too niche for me. But there was, there has been Amish romance,
right.
Where there isn't as much as a kiss, you know.
Yes.
It's all very lustful looks, but nothing actually happens. And then they have, like, when 50 Shades happened, and 50 Shades wasn't Mills and Boone, but it was doing something very similar to what Mills and Boone was doing or trying to do. They kind of brought in racier lines. And at the moment they have a subgenre called Dare, and basically you'll have between the covers action. I don't know what you say at 9:30 in the morning. Between the covers action.
Yeah, I think that sums it up beautifully. We were telling people to stay between the covers today for different reasons, because of the cold. But yeah, we're in a different area altogether now. But that's, people will know what you're talking about. I think the title Fling to Ring is one of the greater ones.
Oh, the titles
from,
are so good. Like,
ring,
the titles are the best. The Billionaire's Bridal Bargain. A Baby on the Greek's Doorstep. The Spanish Billionaire's Pregnant Wife. Like, they stuff everything into the title. Yeah. And actually, the authors don't choose the titles.
Really?
And Yeah, and the ones I spoke to, the authors I spoke to for the documentary, and I've spoken to a couple of others, because the ones I spoke to are in Northern Ireland, but there are ones in the South as well, and in Dublin and around the country. But anyway, they're sometimes a little bit, you know, they wouldn't be a fan of the titles necessarily, but it's not their choice. Basically, it's a way of marketing the book, of telling you exactly what's going to be in it.
Now, you said you read, I don't know if you read one or two or bits of all of them, or, you know, not all of them, but...
I read three in just before we made the documentary, yeah.
And as a writer yourself and as a dedicated reader, how are they for you?
Well, I think that... So the criticism of Mills and Boone is that they are predictable, and some people say they're formulaic. But for people that love them, which is loads of people, that is the appeal. So, you know, like, basically what binds all Mills and Boone books together is the happy ending.
Okay.
Like, it's not a Mills and Boone book if it doesn't have a happy ending, essentially. And so I could understand how people would get comfort from it. And I read three, and I liked one of them. I wasn't... what did I read four? I don't know. One of them definitely wasn't for me. One of them I liked, and the other two must have been somewhere in between.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing, I guess. There's so many subgenres. But, like, I do like unpredictability, but sometimes, especially at times like these, when the world is very uncertain, people want to know exactly what happens. So if that's what you're looking for, you'll find it in Mills and Boone.
And you'll find plenty of it. I mean, if you spoke to Lynn Graham, and you'd spoken to her once before for the newspaper, but not for TV. It's her first ever TV interview. And, you know, I've never heard of Lynn Graham, and I hope she doesn't, you know, she won't mind me saying that, but she has sold a fair amount of books.
Oh, yeah, and the thing is, she doesn't want you to have heard of her,
okay.
So that's great.
She'll be happy with that development, okay.
Yeah, so see, I had never heard of her either until a few years ago, and I think it was 2016, she was publishing her 100th novel, which, like, if I write a book a year, I'm doing well, but a lot of Mills and Boone writers will write 6 or 7 books a year, which is just insane to me, and really impressive. Like, the work ethic is incredible. And so anyway, it was her 100th book, so I contacted her, and she was quite reticent about doing an interview. She'd never done one before, and this was for print, which is less intimidating than cameras coming into your house or whatever. So anyway, she agreed, and she had her daughter sit in, her grown daughter, Lynn is in her 60s now, because she just made her feel more comfortable. But I just found her so fascinating, couldn't believe I'd never heard of her. She has now sold 45 million books. Like, that is just a phenomenal number. She's now written 120 novels, 45 million books.
Incredible.
And, like, most people haven't heard of her. Now, of course, if you're a Mills and Boone reader, you have heard of her.
Yes.
But if you're not, you know, like, you may never have read a book by Jojo Moyes or David Walliams, but you know the names, you know?
Sure.
And she has sold more books than them, but she wants to keep herself to herself. Like, when she first started writing Mills and Boone in the, it was 1987 she started, like, she did not get a good response from everyone or from many people in her community. Was quite conservative, and these weren't the kind of books that they wanted to know about, because her books are of that more traditional variety, you know, Mediterranean billionaires and British virgins mainly, and you know, there's a lot of action in them. I think she didn't get a great response, and so she decided to keep herself to herself. But she did the interview with us, and I was delighted. Like, I'm just so impressed by her and sort of in awe of those sales, of her work ethic, and of the fact that no one knows who she is, you know, that you could be that successful and not be heard of, you know, outside of your loyal readership.
But her husband in the little library that they have pointed out that the Desert Bride was her most popular book. And sold, can you remember how many?
I think it was like 800,000 copies. Like,
just
mad.
Phenomenon.
Yeah, of this one book. And like, yeah, she has, you know, an entire library full of the translations. They're translated into all these, I think, 30 languages her books are. And like, that's the thing, like her husband, he's retired now, and he's as involved as she is. Like, he came to the interview and did the interview, and so did her daughter. And they're so proud. But, like, they're also, you know, her daughter helps her with the more modern elements of writing these books, because that's another big thing that has changed. Like, the Me Too movement has had an impact on Mills and Boone. So consent comes into the books now, whereas Lynn's early books, you know, it wouldn't have. The fantasy didn't involve that. But now there'll be notes and, you know, making sure that, you know, that everyone's comfortable with the action that's happening in the book. And her daughter would help her with that, you know, she's a bit younger. And then her Lynn's husband, he keeps her library and he keeps track of sales and what's published where. And he's just kind of like her cheerleader. And it's lovely to see, you know. And because there is a snobbery around Mills and Boone, for sure.
And where does that come from?
I think it's probably because it's mainly women reading them, and it's mainly women writing them. And there have been arguments over the years about whether the books are feminist or anti-feminist. And the argument being that traditionally the female characters were quite submissive, and that, you know, it said in order to have a happy ending, you must end up with a man, preferably a billionaire. But the other side of that is that these books are almost exclusively written by women, read almost exclusively by women, and it's women choosing what to read, and it doesn't really matter what anyone beyond that thinks, you know. And so there's actually quite a feminist empowerment in that. So I think, some of the snobbery is probably around the fact that it's women, and also, like, there isn't, sometimes people think there's a formula to Mills and Boone books, which there isn't. It's not like they're given a template by the publisher, but these are business women. And they're trying to make a living, and so they know what their readers want because they will let them know when they try something different, and so they will write. The reader will know what to expect. You know, they're writing what the reader wants, and so sometimes I think people can be a bit poo-pooing of that, but it's comfort. And like we watch films where we know it's going to be a happy ending. So
yeah, and we'd
you know,
roles. You know, I the Fig Rolls would be my Mills and Boone. You know, if I love them and I need them sometimes more than want them, as the song says. But
I think crunchy nut cornflakes is mine.
You see, yes, and we all have something we need in our lives. And you've got yours, your crunchy nut cornflakes, and you might need a big bowl of them after we've talked this morning, or I don't know, but you have to treat yourself, don't you?
Exactly.
What about commissioning people like Sarah Ferguson to write one? She would have been Royal Family's one of the daughter-in-laws. I mean, that's another string to their bow, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, because they're trying to stay relevant. Like, I think the image of Mills and Boone is that it's something your granny read, you know, or like that it's not read by younger people. But they're kind of, I guess that's how they try to stay on top of things. So Sarah Ferguson she's kind of their latest signing, as it were. And so she's going to write a book for them. And then they announced in the last year, Georgia Tuffalo, who is...
I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yes, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, thank you.
That's her,
And she was, she's a reality star. She's got a big Instagram following. You know, she's popular with younger people. And so she's writing four books for them. And so that's quite a savvy move, you know, because she'll help to sell and keep the readers going. And like another part of that is the e-reader. So Mills and Boone, like they basically publish their books like magazines. So they're only on the shelves for a month, then they're gone. And after 3 months, they pulp them all.
Wow.
But they can, but electronically they can stay available for ages. And the other thing is, if you are worried about the snobbery around romance, or you just don't want people to know what you're reading, you know, that's what the e-reader was great for. Like, that's what they say, 50 Shades of Grey, how it did particularly well was it kind of coincided with the boom in the e-reader.
Exactly.
And so I think Mills and Boone has benefited from that as well.
I get the sense as well from your programme that libraries are a great source for Mills and Boone readers.
Yes, and we talked to a librarian. And the thing there is, like, the readers of Mills and Boone, I love how much comfort they give people. Like, it just cannot be overstated. And I really didn't realise that until I made this. But what you have is people go into the library and they... Like, people eat Mills and Boone books. You know, you finish one, you start another one straight away. That seems to be the way that people read them. And so people will go into the library, they will max out their card, whatever they're allowed to get out, 8 or 9 books, and they will take out 8 or 9 Mills and Boone books, often by the same authors, because some of them have huge back catalogues, and they could be back, like the librarian we spoke to said they could be back within 5 days getting another 8 or 9, you know?
Yeah.
And that's brilliant. Like,
great.
I mean, look, who doesn't love libraries? But, like, That kind of voracious reader just really benefits from libraries, I think.
And do you know what? Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was simply going to say that I'm not a fan of snobbery when it comes to reading. I think that once people are reading, I don't care what they're reading, I think it's great that they have a book in their hand. Would that be fair?
Exactly. And I think there's a difference between something not being for you. Like, there are kinds of books I don't like, and that's fine, but I don't think anyone else shouldn't read them, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true.
Like, the great comfort in reading, the great way of leaving the world behind, social media behind and everything, and just being on your own. A book, it doesn't really matter what the book is.
It's a joy. There's lots of people, lots of readers listening in this morning. I just had the flashback, says Gillian, of being made to read Mills and Boone aloud in secondary school by our English teacher, who was a nun. A memory that was tucked away from the 1990s and just returns this morning. Claire was on to say, every Friday for many years ago, a national school teacher would come to the library and borrow 6 Mills and Boone's books. She always said it was her little escape after the school week. Another would sit and wait for Mills and Boone books to be returned. She refused to try anything else in the library. Another says, I worked in an office with a lady from Waterford who used to write Mills and Boone's books. So hello, Peggy, if you're still out there. Another says, a fascinating insight into the popularity of these books. Reading the romance by Janice Radway, I thought I'd be hate reading this, but found it fascinating when I did. It was a mandatory book for a college course back in the day. And another from Anne and Lucan says, my first Mills and Boone came given to me by my aunt was by Lucy Walker. I was in the outback of Australia, but it got me into reading. I'm now into murder mysteries, which is lovely. And Christina says, what's wrong with happy endings? I love them. Movies, books, whatever, especially in these times, which is echoing what you were saying there, Ethna. And one last one from Marion Kilmaine says, I was a librarian in East Africa 25 years ago, and men and women loved Mills and Boone's books, especially, precisely because the language is fairly easy and the plots were predictable and they were a great success and helped people improve their English. So, you know, it's a gateway drug for some people when it comes to reading.
And I had no idea how popular they were, even, you know, within my own circle. Like, when I told friends and family I was making this, like, my aunt, she was in hospital at one stage, and the woman in the bed next to her had a box of them, and my aunt just made her way through the box of Mills and
Really?
Like, yeah, friends and, you know, people through work, I went through this phase. You know, it's often a time of stress or worry, and people just turn to them and get great escapism. Marion Keyes is a big champion of them. She, when her dad died, she said she found great comfort reading them, and when she was studying for exams in university, like, I think for a lot of people, there's a connection between Mills and Boone and a tough point in their life, and that Mills and Boone was a thing that helped them out of it.
Okay,
so I think that's lovely.
We're back to that comfort blanket, I think, for sometimes it would sometimes require. Moving away from there for a moment, because Three Little Truths, your own wonderful book, is out in, is it paperback next week?
Said in paperback, yes, on the 4th of February. Now, it is not a Mills and Boone, and it is not a romance with a full happy ending, just in case I do any false.
Let's not confuse the story here. And I suspect it was a tough old time to bring a book out in the middle of it all, especially if you're thinking America, UK and so on.
Yeah, like, it was meant to be published last year. So the paperback is for Ireland and the UK, and that was meant to be published last year. But, you know, obviously the pandemic, they said they would hold it because at the point it was meant to come out, all the shops were closed. But now it's coming out when all the shops are closed anyway. But I mean, it had to come out eventually. You can only hold on for so long. And like, that's just the luck of the draw, you know.
Sure.
What can you do? People can just order books online and you hope they will. But, you know, beyond that, like, it is a global pandemic and it's beyond your control. But it came out in America in, you know, its first big launch in America was in October. And like, loads of states had their shops closed then. And that is like, that's tough, you know. I wish that hadn't been the case, but like I say, there's not much I can do about
not
it.
Not much.
And it really, you just have to concentrate on the next book. Like, that's the thing with writing. Yeah. I really believe once you finish it, it's beyond your control.
Are you nearly there?
Yes, I'm nearly there. I found writing last year, or this continued year, very, very difficult.
I
am getting there. It's like blood from a stone that has already been through a transfusion. That's how I'm describing it.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. It is. Yeah, it's such is the nature of it all. God help us. But congratulations on the new book. It's not the new book, the release of it in paperback, Three Little Truths. We encourage people to pick that up, or at least order it from their local bookshop, of course. And we'll be seeing you tonight. I watched it already. It's a gorgeous documentary, short but perfectly formed, in Mills and Boone, Writing for Love in Northern Ireland. It's on BBC One TV tonight at 11:15. Ethna, it's always good to talk to you. I'll talk to you when the world gets back to some class of normality.
Yes, okay. Thanks,
nice
Brian.
To talk to you. Ethna Shortall joining us on the phone there this morning, 51551. Anne from Galway on to say, every few days I would walk to the library in Terranure with my grandfather to collect at least 20 Mills and Boone books each time for my bedridden grandmother. And we used all our tickets for her. And that is, there's no doubting their popularity, that is for sure.